Oh, this is Srimad Bhagavatam, first canto, first chapter, 13th verse. Oh, Suta Goswami, we are eager to learn about the personality of Godhead and his incarnations. Please explain to us those teachings imparted by previous masters, for one is uplifted both by speaking them and by hearing them. Purport. The conditions for hearing the transcendental message of the Absolute Truth are set forth herein. The first condition is that the audience must be very sincere and eager to hear, and the speaker must be in the line of disciplic succession from the recognized Acharya. The transcendental message of the Absolute is not understandable by those who are materially absorbed. Under the direction of a bona fide spiritual master, one becomes gradually purified. Therefore, one must be in the chain of disciplic succession and learn the spiritual art of submissive hearing. In the case of Suta Goswami and the sages of Naimisharanya, all these conditions are fulfilled because Srila Suta Goswami is in the line of Srila Vyasadeva, and the sages of Naimisharanya are all sincere souls who are anxious to learn the truth. Thus, the transcendental topics of Lord Sri Krishna's superhuman activities, his incarnation, his birth, appearance and disappearance, his forms, his names, and so on, are all easily understandable because all requirements are fulfilled. Such discourses help all men on the path of spiritual realization. So imagine that. This is the book of God. This is all the knowledge there is. The end of knowledge in one book. Of course, it's many books, but one title, Srimad Bhagavatam. And, you know, this is the most important book in our life, of course, but I'll just tell some little stories how it all came to be that we got this book. So imagine, if you will, 50 years ago, 52 years ago maybe it is, my girlfriend Melanie and I were in our mid-20s. We were stranded for months on a remote fire lookout in the wilderness in the summer of 1966. We were desperate to find the meaning in our lives, what it's all about. Where is this absolute knowledge? How do we find out about the truth? And then our best friends, our very best friends in life, drove in one day in a snowstorm, and they gave us the answers. Mike, Joan, and Joan's sister Jan had driven nonstop from Manhattan to the West Coast to tell us about the incredible man they had met that summer, the Swami. Swami Bhaktivedanta was his name, and as my friends began to talk, I was impressed not so much by his philosophy or whatever else they were saying, but more by the profound change I saw in the beloved friends of so many years. They seemed to glow, and with gentle ease they refused the venison and the drugs, even the coffee that they were offered. This Swami must be the real thing, I thought. We're packed tightly in the small Forest Service cabin as night descends, soft lantern light through the two windows framing ponderosa pine branches whipped by gusts of snow. But what exactly is a Swami, Mike? I mean, you keep talking about this Swami. Swami is a title, really. It means someone who can control his senses. Wow. Joni's getting into it now. Samar, I'm so excited. We drove straight out here to tell you about him. I think this is the one, this Swami. We were chanting all the way out here. You get really high, she said. They did seem pretty happy, grinning all over the place with those big red beads around their necks, mumbling something or other. Their cat, Scutzelbrunzer, wasn't doing as well. They brought this big black cat all the way out here in a parked car, in a packed car. He's under one of two chairs in the place, hissing with bared fangs at our dog, Ralph. Jan says, he put 27 stitches in one guy's leg. Reto and Frida, our two young cats, are confused but excited too. High, huh? Like, what do you mean? I mean higher than you've ever been before. And you can do it all the time, chanting. See? You're saying God's names over and over, said Mike. And because Krishna is non-different from his name, really, God is dancing on your tongue. He's with you, and you feel it. Calm, aware, like, how can anything go wrong when Krishna is there? Now, wait a minute. Who's this Krishna character? Krishna is the main name for God. It's the name he likes the most. It means all attractive. He's so beautiful, he attracts everything to himself like a magnet. Now, wait a sec. I've got some books out in the car. I'll run and get them. Hey, let Ralph out with you. Melanie is quiet, puttering over the propane stove with Jan. Now Janaki, that's an easy one. Venison burgers have been rejected by our new arrivals. No more meat, fish, or eggs for us, they said. So Melanie's cooking up some rice and beans. These are my friends mostly, but Melanie digs them and goes along. Jan's rolling dough to make some kind of round flatbread thing they learned from the Swami. See, they puff up, she says. A whiffle of snow blows in before Michael, with three books under his arm, slams the door and says, these are some books the Swami translated. 5,000 years old. The most ancient knowledge on the planet. They're called Srimad Bhagavatam. Dig this. I grab one, Melanie grabs one, and we're trying to understand this far-out book jacket with its bright colors, gaily dressed people dancing inside of flowers and galaxies spinning off. Melanie said, I mean, you look at the cover. Here's this blue-faced guy with four arms, with a flower coming out of his stomach, with another fellow with four heads on the top of it, and I'm asking, what is that? That's God, they said, and I didn't blink. I guess that's another good thing about hippies. We were really open to possibility, and we didn't automatically reject something that we couldn't comprehend. What's this writing here, Joni, this language? That's Sanskrit, the mother of all tongues. These books, there are like 100 more the Swami hasn't had time to translate yet, describe Krishna in great detail, and who God is, and who we are, the universe, how everything fits, the whole system, all there is to know about everything. Yeah, far out. But like, give me an example. Who am I? Well, the first thing Swamiji teaches, you are not this body. Okay, I can understand that from the times on drug trips and watching my body from the ceiling. Or eyes wide open. Or that time on an acid in a blossoming blackberry patch where I watched my soul pass through thousands of bodies while bumblebees buzz symphonies. What is this Supreme Personality of Godhead, Melanie asks. That's just it, gleams Joni. That's the key. God is a person. He's the Supreme Person. Just like you and me, he laughs, he cries, he does everything we do. And we can relate to him and get close to him and play with him by chanting his name. Now, but what about the old man in the sky, the Christian God? Is he different from Krishna? No, God is God, like Allah, or what's that, Jehovah, and even what the native Indians call the Great Spirit. It's all the same guy. Krishna is just another name for God, the Supreme Person. And these ancient writings from India have more information about God, I mean thousands of times more info than you can find out in the Bible or the Quran or the Torah. Yeah, it's like the encyclopedia in 50 volumes compared to a little brochure, Mike says. And this Swami, what's he like? Oh, Joni rolls her eyes like she does when something's really out of sight. He's too much. He's an old man, maybe 70, but he looks like a kid. He glows. He's always got a huge smile. He's the real thing, Joni says, and I'm just starting to believe her. So this is how Srimad Bhagavatam came into our lives. And Mukunda only had one copy of this book. Srila Prabhupada printed a trunk full, maybe 100 three-set volumes of the first canto of Srimad Bhagavatam before he left India. Now, you maybe have all read the stories with the trial and tribulations he went through, the years he spent putting together this one book, getting it translated, printed, laid out. Having just printed my own book, I can't even imagine the troubles Prabhupada went through to do this. Huh. And the cover art, and it was just so revolutionary, it just blew our minds when we saw it. We knew something really important was in this book. But it was very difficult to understand. It was pretty far out. But we could see that Bhaktivedanta Swami had radically changed our friends in a good way. So we thought, well, okay, the book's one thing, but we've got to meet this Swami. This is from, I'm reading the early days in San Francisco. Prabhupada has arrived in San Francisco on January 17th, and this is the next morning and the first time we're seeing him speak in the Frederick Street Temple in Haight-Ashbury District, 1967. The next morning, January 18th, he comes down to speak from a book called Chaitanya Charitamrita. We don't have a clue what this is, this book, but we drink in every word. For thousands of years, a major portion of the world practiced Krishna consciousness. But by about 1500 AD, after 2000 years of Buddhist and Muslim influence, the ancient Krishna science was all but extinct. Mayavadi philosophy swept the land. Mayavadi means impersonalism. I am God, you are God. God is an idea, not a person. Spiritual perfection is merging into the void. So as Prabhupada explains, Lord Chaitanya, almost 7 feet tall, long-limbed, with a golden complexion and long black hair, appeared in 1486 in Bengal, India. He was an incarnation of Radha and Krishna combined, who came to earth as a Krishna devotee to experience love for himself. By his teachings and example, Chaitanya revived chanting of the Maha Mantra as the simplest way to make direct contact with God as the Supreme Person. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Chaitanya would meet and debate the greatest scholars of his time using evidence from Vedic scriptures, not argumentum baculum. Wow, Swamiji knows Latin too, to defeat them. But feel the bliss of love for himself? I don't quite get this, but it sounds all right. I'm thinking, okay, this Chaitanya fellow is kind of a hippie, one of us, with his long hair and yellow robes. I can dig that. And he was a contemporary of Shakespeare, so it's not that long ago. He was always singing and dancing and going into ecstasy, so this could be good. I can't take my eyes off the Swami this morning. He's just so beautiful. I mean, physically beautiful. He says, another name for Krishna is Bhagavan. Bhagavan means he has all opulences in full. And there are six opulences. Krishna is all-powerful. He knows everything. He's got all knowledge. He's got all wealth because everything belongs to him. He's all famous. Everyone knows God. He's all beautiful and he's all renounced. That means he's the all attractive. Krishna means all attractive. I get it. Because Bhaktivedanta Swami is the most attractive person I've ever seen, and this guy only works for Krishna. He's the messenger. So how beautiful Krishna must be. The Swami's physical beauty seems ever fresh and energetic, fueled by transcendental energy, like the fluid grace you see in youth. The Swami's eyes, his large mouth, his facial expressions all play together with everything he says. He would break mid-sentence, a dramatic pause, like returning to the tambura drone in Indian raga. He seems to know everything, and I can't take my ears away. Evenings, the Swami would speak from Srimad Bhagavatam. He started right at the beginning. And after a few days, we saw that everything he has been telling us about Krishna is backed up by this ancient authority. Now, this was so convincing to us at the time, because we'd been hammered for years by this theory, that theory, the dozens of books, this book, that book, the dozens of books purporting to know the truth. None of them satisfied. But as soon as we saw the personal example of the book, speaking the book, we knew it was the absolute truth. None of these other books carried the weight of thousands of years. Srimad Bhagavatam. This is what blew our minds, that this knowledge is coming down from thousands and thousands of years ago, and there's so much of it. Prabhupada had three little books, and he said this is only the beginning of 14, is it 14 cantos? 15 cantos? And like the sages at Namasharanya, we were hungry for this truth. Oh, Suta Goswami, we are eager to learn about the personality of Godhead and his incarnations. Please explain to us those teachings imparted by previous masters, for one is uplifted both by speaking them and by hearing them. At one point, a few months after Prabhupada came, the Swami, it wasn't Prabhupada yet, the Swami came to live with us, Malati and I, we had to go to jail. We had committed a crime before we met Prabhupada. But the time was coming up for us to serve our time in jail. We were very worried that maybe we wouldn't see Prabhupada again, the Swami again. This was our deepest anxiety. One morning, Swamiji reads a verse from Srimad Bhagavatam that puts the looming jail time into perspective. My first evidence of mercy to my devotee is to plunder all his wealth, whatever he has got. You see, whatever he has got, I take it away. And when he becomes confused and baffled, he fully surrenders unto me. Sometimes Krishna gives special mercy. He takes away everything so you will surrender. That is the perfection of Krishna consciousness, that I have nothing more except Krishna. So that put it into perspective. At morning and evening lectures, we would leave our... Let's see, where is that, right? We would leave our dogs outside the temple door. By now there was quite a pack. Ralph, Ketal, that was Gurdas's dog, and a few other mutts. Dayananda here, he had a dog. If the door was open, sometimes the dogs would come in, and if Swamiji was speaking, he'd stop until they were shooed out. Then he'd launch into one of his favorite themes. Just like animals, you have also got four propensities: eating, sleeping, mating, and defending. You eat, the dog must eat. You sleep, the dog also sleeps. And just like a dog, you are having sex life and defending yourself. But you have got this human form of life. You have got special ability, consciousness. You can know what God is, who am I, and where I am going. This is special. Do not waste this opportunity. You choose dog or God, it is up to you. After lectures with the Swami, gone back upstairs, several of us would step out onto the sidewalk to smoke a cigarette. We kind of knew we had to quit this vice, but geez, we'd barely stopped using heroin. So for a while, the Swami tolerated this behavior, although hints were always flying around. Such class of men is simply trying to understand what is God, what is not God, but practically he will be engaged in material sense enjoyment. He'll not give up anything, not even smoking. He'll go on doing everything, but he'll discuss very scholarly, this is not God, this is God. This is simply a waste of time. The Swami kept everything simple, little by little, spoon-feeding the complexities of genuine spiritual life to his sincere, loving neophytes. His lecture topics ranged over a vast area, but he repeated himself often, especially basic ideas. Krishna is the Supreme Personality. Chant his name and serve him. Give up all nonsense. Your life will be perfect. Most of us couldn't remember any Sanskrit beyond Hare Krishna and Rama. Maybe karma, bhakti, ananda, but we were learning. I finally bought the 3-volume set of Swami's first canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, paying him in 3 $5 installments. Swamiji was lecturing every morning from later cantos of Srimad Bhagavatam or from the Bhagavad Gita, and in the evenings he spoke from Chaitanya Charitamrita, or as he called it, the teachings of Lord Chaitanya. The Swami possessed the only copies of these books, so it was hard to follow up on the things he said in class, because we had no books to deepen our understanding. We had a few copies. That was all. We just had this one book. And in that first edition, it was very hard to read. There were many misprints. The English was rather uneven. But we had the Swami. We had the personal Srimad Bhagavatam. We could watch him day and night. We caught on quickly how this whole thing works. We caught on quickly by observing Srila Prabhupada, the Swami, how this whole thing of Krishna consciousness works. And now, so many years later, I marvel at how all you devotees, most of you, never even met Srila Prabhupada, how you are so pure and dedicated and convinced. Such angelic people, you never even saw Prabhupada in action. It's only because you realize Srila Prabhupada, the person Srila Prabhupada, through his books. I know I couldn't have done that. I couldn't have done what you guys do. I mean, I was with Prabhupada for 7 years almost daily, and I barely became a devotee. So my deepest respect and admiration for all of the devotees here who have maintained such a high, pure standard. In fact, we had no books. Even if we did, we became so busy spreading Krishna consciousness around the world. Frankly, we didn't have time to read what little few books there were, even if we had them. Many of us were so busy getting the books produced, getting them paid for, and distributed, that we never read those books. And I realized this when I set out to write my own book, my own memories of Srila Prabhupada. geez, I hadn't read more than just, you know, the first volumes of Srimad Bhagavatam. And, of course, Bhagavad Gita a few times. But that was it. All those other books Srila Prabhupada wrote were unread by me at the 70 years of age. So I started reading. My friend, nearby friend, had a full library of Prabhupada's books. So I would started reading. I started reading and writing for an hour or so each day. My mind just can't deal with more than about an hour of reading one of Srila Prabhupada's books. 1 hour even is very, so full of so many thoughts. My mind just can't wrap around all of that. But anyway, I read for about an hour every day. I read Srimad Bhagavatam, all the cantos, one by one. Teachings of Lord Chaitanya, Nectar of Devotion, all the books. And we have this wonderful website called the Vedabase. I don't know how many of you might have it. How many people have Vedabase on their computers? Oh, good. Almost everybody knows Vedabase. Everything Prabhupada ever wrote or said, everything about all the books, they're all there. So, by reading these books and reading Vedabase, I read every conversation Prabhupada had. I read every letter he wrote, thousands of letters. I looked at every photo of Srila Prabhupada. There were over 30,000 photos of Srila Prabhupada. And not one of them's bad. There's not one photo of Srila Prabhupada that did not come out perfect. So in this way, Srila Prabhupada began to live with me again. I would write every morning. I would wake up and race to the computer, so anxious to pick up where we left off yesterday, because Prabhupada was now living with me. At least to write a few hours, you know, usually 3, 4 maybe hours. But sometimes I would look up through my window, and it would be dark outside. I'd look down and realize I'm still in my pajamas. I must have just written 12 hours straight. Srila Prabhupada lives in his words. And by reading them, Srila Prabhupada comes into your mind, and he takes over. He takes over your spirit. Now, many people have asked me, oh, your memories are so detailed in your books. You must have kept a diary, right? No. We were too busy, too active in our pirate chief's wild adventure on the battlefield to even sleep, what to speak of keeping a diary. We thought it would never end. That this wonderful real-life fantasy we were living would go on forever. Playing and laughing with our Srila Prabhupada, our leader. He was always around. Who could even think about writing a diary, keeping a diary? There was no history yet. There was nothing. It was all just happening. Every moment. We lived in the absolute moment with Srila Prabhupada. No thought about how big and organized it would ever become. So Srila Prabhupada's words now, after having written these books, I realize how important they are, and that he's alive in these books. Practically everything he said is in these books. For example, I read back through all of the Swami's lectures during that first three-month period in San Francisco, 1967. And I remembered everything. Oh, yeah, I'd be reading this lecture. And oh, yeah, right there is when that car backfired in the street. That's right. It was that, the thoughts came back that clearly. Hmm. The Swami's San Francisco lectures, delivered between January and early April of 1967, are remarkable for their detailed descriptions of the innermost secrets of Krishna conscious history and teachings. Who knows? Maybe Swamiji thought he didn't have that much time. He was already over 70. Or that we new disciples were more advanced than we really were. But he really laid it down, zinger after zinger, like these. The hand and body is created all at a time. It is not that the body is created first and then the hand is created. Our relation with Krishna is like the hand and the body. Therefore, Krishna and we both are eternal. And there is no history of eternity. It has no beginning and no end. Krishna is blue because he is all attractive. The sky is blue because it reflects Krishna's blue color in the spiritual sky, as much as the sunlight is reflected through skylight glasses. You simply pour the water, it will go down, just like the rivers are flowing to the sea level. Similarly, a highly developed Krishna conscious person, at once he will hear about something of Krishna, he will be in ecstasy. He becomes so glad that he is faltering in speaking. These signs of ecstasy are there. You become at once transferred to the spiritual atmosphere and platform. These are very higher stage. Sometimes you laugh, sometimes you cry, sometimes you fall down. These are the symptoms. There are many physical changes also we are experiencing practically. Because my face is the index of mind, so similarly, what is going on within you, that will be reflected. It is such a nice thing. By seeing the face, by seeing the appearance of a person, if you remember Krishna, you should know that this man is in Krishna consciousness. So there is a change of physical feature also. He becomes glowing. Now, after so many years, a servant of that disciplic succession has come here again to preach. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has practically sown the seed of this Krishna consciousness, and it is spreading, and it is sure it will spread. Now it has come to your country, and I am sure the students who are taking very seriously about this movement, they will spread in the Western world. This is not coincidence. This is destiny. These are all taken from Prabhupada's lectures. Yes, Lord Chaitanya was a hippie with long hairs. He has come to save you and shave you. Birth, death, disease, and old age, I can make these things disappear. That is the real magic. So these are the words that drove my memory in these books. And once the Swami had settled in my heart like this, he took over. He took over. I can say that Krishna wrote these books, not I. I experienced miracle after miracle of the miracles of the memory. Krishna says he is memory. Bhagavad Gita, he says, I am memory. And if you read Chasing Rhinos with the Swami, you'll see detailed descriptions of everything, almost every day, described in detail over 7 years with Srila Prabhupada. How could this be? Because Srila Prabhupada came and lived inside my mind and my spirit. And he wrote these books through my brain and my fingers. One example. There was at one period writing the London chapters. I remembered that George Harrison had given a very important interview to the BBC back in those days, probably in 19, 69 or 70. It was a very important interview he gave for BBC, which went out all over the country, where he talks about the Krishna people and what we are and who we are. But I couldn't find it. I bought book after book looking for it. I even sent off to BBC for their records. Nobody could find it anywhere. I had dozens of books. I had them all on a shelf, even lying on a table in front of the shelf, maybe 100 books, so that I could research for this book. And one night I was sleeping in my little bedroom next to the office room, and this being Los Angeles, there was an earthquake. About, I think it was a 5-point earthquake or something. Not a bad one, but enough to wake me up. The whole bed was jolting. And I heard some noises out in the other room. But I went back to sleep. When I woke up, I went out in the office there. And this book was lying on the floor. It fell out of the bookcase. And it was open like this. I looked down. And that was the lecture that I was looking for, the interview that I was looking for 4 or 5 days. Anyway, my only request to you is that you read a little bit of Srimad Bhagavatam or one of Prabhupada's books every day, just some. And his words will keep you safe and happy. Thank you all so much. Does anyone have any questions or points? I'll be happy to answer.